Hello, my darlings, and welcome back to another exciting adventure here on Radio Wasteland, the best in paranormal talk radio. I'm your host, Chauncey Allworth. This is my co-host, Kara Kittrick.
Hello.
Kara, do you got any news for us today?
Yes, I do. So, a Bigfoot statue was stolen from a family's home last month in Clackamas County, Oregon, which I bring up only because this is definitely the third or fourth time I've read a story about a Bigfoot statue getting stolen, all in different towns, different states, all across the U.S. Who is stealing Bigfoot statues? Why? Now you can all mull that over. A horror event company in Japan, since traditional haunted houses are obviously out this year, has launched a, quote, drive-through haunted house, which may be a portent for October. It actually seems much more terrifying than it sounds when you read about it. Guests are trapped in their car while horrible creatures swarm it and try to get inside, and if you want, they even plaster it with blood and entrails. They even give you tapes to play in your car with spooky stories and music to enhance the experience. And in news that is truly scary, a new survey on COVID-19 shows that it isn't uncommon to wrestle with symptoms for many months, and that COVID can cause a variety of exceedingly bizarre problems, like hair loss, memory issues, rash, and vision changes. Quote, one woman in the group described her blood, when they were taking her blood, as being like chocolate pudding. It was so thick, the creator of the survey said. Back to you, Chauncey.
The Bigfoot statue stolen. Maybe Bigfoot was part of the Confederacy.
Somebody maybe.
Yeah. It was right there. You know, has anybody checked the bottom of the local lake?
Well, Bigfoot is at the very least xenophobic.
Yeah.
You know, totally. It doesn't like people in its territory. It runs when you spot them. You know,
yeah,
it's like.
Totally. He's all, I do declare that Bigfoots are better than other people. Maybe
was Bigfoot that your southern accent?
Yeah, I've been working on it.
It's really good.
Have you ever been to the South?
Yeah, I've been to the South once because my brother lives there.
Are there really so many?
There are a lot of racist statues in the South. But.
Yeah, I'm just like, and like the news was talking about Nancy Pelosi like taking him down from Washington D.C. and I'm, you know, outside of like taking him down in the discussion, of course I have my opinion and it's the same opinion as yours, but I don't see how Washington D.C. ever approved putting up statues of Confederacy people in the capital of the country. You know, that's like putting up Benedict Arnold in the capital.
A lot of them were put up like in the 50s and 60s when all the civil rights stuff was happening and the South was really like, we're going to assert our heritage. And the North was like, you are important to passing our bills, so okay.
We're the United States. We stand up for the little guy, but we don't put up statues of losers.
That's not what I find objectionable about them.
I'm just saying all other things aside, like even if they're Trump supporters and stuff, you'd think they'd just be all, yeah, we don't like losers. Trump didn't like John McCain because he got caught. And yet they're going to put statues of the losers? It's weird. They're the losers. Get them out of there. They lost. History is written by the winners.
See, I feel like this is a weird argument to take because
they're not falling for the other argument, Kara, so we have to come up with a new one.
They're not falling for the other argument because they are unpersuadable. People who, like, really care about Confederate statues will never change their mind, ever, no matter what you say to them. The only thing you can do is shut them up.
Is shut them up?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying, like, kill them or whatever. I'm
like,
saying,
take them out? Are you saying, like...
yeah, I'm not proposing assassinating people or anything.
No,
this,
I know.
But
I know.
I'm saying, you know, make it too toxic to share their horrible opinions.
Well, bringing us back to the original topic, you said who would steal the Bigfoot. The answer is Chauncey in high school would have stolen that Bigfoot statue and it would be in my house.
Why?
And I was super proud of it because, you know, I was a rebel without a cause, man.
I'm rebelling
against whatever you got. Okay, horror event in Japan, man. Drive-through haunted house. Did you ever go to in Reading the spooky lagoon?
No, I didn't.
So the local pool, they actually had a haunted house where you'd get in a raft. And they'd take you through on the raft, and it was all tented over, and they'd have, like, spooky stuff going on in the water and, like, around you and stuff.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, I really like this idea. I think it could be really well done, although
don't
damage to the car seems...
Yeah, I think Well, that part is optional. Like, you can opt in.
Optional damage to the car.
Well, they don't damage it, but they do cover it in blood.
Right, so. Yeah. I'm on board, though. I think that is a great idea. It's a fun idea.
Well, so you know I startle really easily.
Yes, I do. Know.
In second grade, the elementary school I was going to had a haunted house, and I was there in my costume like everyone else, and I was dressed as a ghoul, and I had a scythe. I got it, and I was like, oh, this isn't that scary. And so I got, like, way ahead of the group and was just sort of walking by myself through the haunted house. And some guy leaps at me, you know, to startle me, and I hit him in the face. This will always be my shame because I, like,
shame.
I'm pretty,
that
I'm
means
pretty
you're
sure
fight,
it
not
drew
flight.
Blood. So. I am. It was a reflex. It was just, ah, kill it.
You know,
and then I just sort of scampered out of there and was like, no one look at me. And then, like, as my mom got out, when she caught up with me, this guy, like, clutching his face, which is bleeding, is like, hit me.
She's all, not again, Kara, not again.
Yeah.
I had this idea. I had friends who were putting on a haunted house, and they didn't like my idea. We were too young at the time to pose as these. We wanted to get some grown-ups to work with us. You know, all the older kids who come through and think it's all stupid. In there. What I wanted to do is have two grown-ups dressed like cops at the end, telling them that they needed to search their bag. Yeah, no, just be people in Halloween cop costumes.
Okay, yeah, that's
you
fine,
know,
then.
Telling them they need to search their bags. They'd be like, oh, God. All right,
that would be pretty funny.
And then COVID. So I like how the new symptoms of COVID are basically getting older. You have hair loss, memory loss, flaky skin and bad vision. It's basically getting...
Yeah, no, that's true. Like, it just steals... It's like the machine from The Princess Bride.
Oh, yeah,
sucks
yeah.
away years of your life.
Totally. So here's my new question that I want to ask conservatives, but I'm too scared to talk about this on Facebook because I don't really like having... And it's not that I'm not willing to have a discussion. It's just there are no discussions on Facebook, so... So surely conservatives can understand the attitude of, I don't want to throw my pearls to the swine. But here's the question that I want. Everybody's going off about masks and how it's unconstitutional. And maybe it is. I don't know. I don't know if it is. The comparison I came up with to myself last night in my own personal conversation with myself, which is what I do, seeing how I moved to a new town and have no friends here, was it unconstitutional to make people black out their windows during World War II when they thought we were going to be bombed?
You know, people refused to do that. It was the same people. Yeah, people refused to do that, and U.S. submarines were considered easy pickings because cities and stuff refused to pass any kind of ordinance for fear of, like, offending the tourism industry and stuff. So there were a lot of people who just didn't do it.
Well, I'm not pretending to have an answer. I don't know. You know, I don't know, you know. I mean,
yeah.
On the flip side, you know, letting all the old and weak die will do something really great for the economy. So.
That's an argument, I guess.
Well, I mean, I think it's the argument that people are going with. Let the old and weak die. We do our thing and, you know, everything will be okay.
That strikes me as horrible.
Yeah, but I'd be better with it if people just admitted that. Like, hey, I want to go get a hamburger, and I'd rather the old and weak die so that I can get a hamburger.
Yeah.
I'm not even saying anything about the law. I mean, all you got to do is be asked, hey, you want to help out your neighbor?
Honestly,
sure, I totally would.
But. I don't want people to admit it because I don't want, like, it to be normal to be able to say things that are just straight-up eugenics and have people be like, yeah, okay, that's your opinion.
Right.
Like, if you say something like that, no one who you know should ever talk to you again for the rest of your life.
I think anti-maskers who are talking about how they don't want to be oppressed by the government and it's a slippery slope.
Right, well, that's stupid too.
Well, I don't know. Maybe it is, and you got to accept that maybe it is. So what they should do is wear a mask with a shirt that says, I'm wearing this mask for my neighbor, not the government, because they all got neighbors. You know, everybody got a mama.
Yeah, I mean, ideally the government should not have to compel anyone to wear a mask because people should do it, but, like, that's true of any law. Laws exist because people suck.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, that's true. So, you know, try your best to care about one another. I'm not saying don't go out. You know, mental health is important, too, but do your best out there. And tonight we're talking about alien-human hybrids, so, you know,
yeah.
Down to reality. You're listening to Radio Wasteland.
Hi, I'm Sue Blake with Powerhouse Solar. Solar energy not only makes financial sense, but right now you can go solar for zero money down. At Powerhouse Solar, we install the most cost-effective and highest efficiency panels from SunPower. And with the electric company's rolling blackouts, Powerhouse Solar can make sure your family is not left in the dark. We have generators and battery backup systems designed for your specific needs. Call Powerhouse Solar today at 275-5600 or visit us on the web at powerhousesolar.com.
Where do you go in Shasta County to get advice on the best type of firearm to meet your needs and how to safely carry and use it? The answer is to join the revolution at locally owned Bastiani Arms. Bastiani Arms believes in a better way to serve their customers and providing them with all the information needed to make the right decisions before and after the sale. They have a large selection of guns and ammunition and always special discounts for veterans. Self-protection is your right. Join the revolution at Bastiani Arms, 2539 Larkspur Lane in Reading, 222-8222. For over 45 years, Clyde's Home Entertainment is the place people turn to for locally owned, expert advice on electronics that turn your home into a theater. Clyde's goes the extra mile for their customers. They have a huge selection of audio and video accessories and equipment. Whether it's the latest 4K television or a hard-to-find accessory, Clyde's is the place for all your home electronic needs. Clyde's is a full-service dealer for Samsung, Klipsch, Yamaha, LG, and more. They offer full-service Dish Network. Be sure to ask about the current monthly specials. The original, and still the best, Clyde's Enterprises, 1250 Hartnell and Reading. They have it all. 221-4144. That's 221-4144. Clyde's.
Dr. Farrell in Palisadro is now making dental work more affordable by offering a Dental Discount Savings Plan annual membership. The Dental Discount Savings Plan is simple, straightforward, and includes 20% off all treatment, such as emergency limited exams, restorative work, fillings, crowns, partials, bridges, dentures, and periodontal treatment, a comprehensive exam, oral cancer screening, a TMJ exam, a periodic exam, and two sets of x-rays, along with cleaning and two fluoride treatments. The program is a discount plan, not a dental insurance plan, and is only available at the office of Dr. Farrell. The Dental Discount Savings Plan annual membership provides immediate eligibility. No yearly maximum, no deductibles, no claims to submit, no limitations for pre-existing treatment, and no waiting periods. Children on the plan must be 15 years or younger. Some restrictions apply. Membership prices may vary. Contact Dr. Farrell, located at 9461 Deschutes Road, Suite 2 in Palisadro. Call 547-57 to make an appointment today. That's 547-5757.
Radio Wasteland comes to you from the Reading studios of Free Fire Radio, 96.5 FM and AM 1460. Visit Radio Wasteland at Instagram at instagram.com/Radio Wasteland.
All right, welcome back to Radio Wasteland, and our guest, Bruce R. Fenton. Tonight we're going to be talking about Exogenesis, his new book, Human Hybrid Humans, A Scientific History of Extraterrestrial Genetic Manipulation. that's a full title. You know, this is something I've always been interested in, because so many people are so incredibly convinced on this one. And it's a topic that has been floating around on, you know, shows like Ancient Aliens and stuff like that for quite some time. And seeing how I have no advanced scientific degree, I don't really have a huge understanding of what this entirely means and why we think this is the case. So why don't we explain, you know, first, let's explain exogenesis, you know, why the title exogenesis?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a good place to start, because that is technically the beginning of our story. So exogenesis is an alternate term for panspermia, the argument that life on Earth began via processes carrying simple organisms from through space, you know, probably on comets, but possibly on, you know, dust in interstellar dust clouds, or other means. You can also have directed panspermia, which infers that an intelligence is behind the propagation of these organisms and possibly sends out small metal, you know, containers with organic material in them, and that these rain down, you know, onto planetary surfaces, or of course ships land and life is dropped off. So there's different ways of looking at exogenesis panspermia. Now, there's a good reason why I suspect that that's the true story of the origins of life on Earth. Now, because the current preferred hypothesis is abiogenesis, the idea that DNA emerged out of random geological and chemical processes, and that life, you know, came out of possibly some hot mineral rock pool somewhere, you know, some strange anomalous type event, which we don't understand. I mean, to this day, no experiment has, you know, been able to replicate an abiogenesis event. So it's entirely hypothetical. Mm. So equally so are the competing models, which are, of course, creationism, the idea that God intervenes and Earth is essentially a creation, life is created on Earth, and again, this is hypothetical, you can't test this, and the third one being exogenesis and abiogenesis, which suffers from some of the same problems. So there is something to say, look, we don't know for sure which one of these is correct. Now, simply the preferred one is abiogenesis. Now, why do I think exogenesis is right? I'll tell you why. It's because if we look at the beginning of this story, it turns out that the first life on this planet emerges somewhere around 4.5 billion years ago. And that's supported from two directions. You have the fossil record, where we have early organisms turning up about 4.2 billion years ago in the fossil record. And the inference there is that we are unlikely to have found the earliest fossil life, right? So we wouldn't have got that lucky yet. So they think if it's 4.2 in the record, there's a good chance it goes back to around 4.5 in reality. So that's their estimate. Now, from the genetic studies, they've looked to see when was the last universal common ancestor of all life on this planet living, which they call LUCA. And that this actually turns out to have been around about 4.5 billion years ago. And this is, again, estimated from genetic studies. So if you think about it, we have two lines of evidence. We have the fossil record, and we have the genetics, both pointing to this event 4.5 billion years ago. The planet itself is 4.6 billion years old. So in just 100 million years, we've gone from, you know, lava, chaos, bombardment, suddenly, and life has appeared. Now, this is quite staggering. It was long thought it took perhaps a billion years of random events to lead to, you know, DNA emerging. Now it turns out that as soon as the planet's surface was suitable to host life, life appeared. Now, I'd say that fits much better with delivery of life from space than a long series of random geological and chemical processes.
Yeah, that makes sense, especially like, you know, when the planet's forming, you know, it's forming out of things that aren't the planet, that are coming from mm-hmm. other places and stuff like that, meaning that...
Well, yes, I mean, absolutely, yes. I mean, you could say that if any of that debris that is involved in this, say cometary debris, is carrying microorganisms, again, that would be a panspermia origin for life. It would mean that, those simple organisms already existed on some of that debris in our solar system, and that have ended up, you know, on the planet's surface at the right moment. Of course, it could equally be a directed panspermia, but right. Either one of those, in either case, I think that panspermia better explains such a fast emergence of life on this planet.
So of these sort of two strains you mentioned of exogenesis, do you have any reason to favor one over the other at this point? Or
yeah, I do personally.
Directed versus non-directed?
Absolutely, yes. In my view, I think that when... Partly because of the speed of this, it looks almost timed with the moment this planet is suitable to host life that it appears. And I find that astonishingly convenient, and that, you know, almost highlights that there's a sudden likelihood that it's a deliberate event, that, you know, the planet's ready, let's see the life on there. But also because we have evidence from, I guess in my book, my research, that there is an intelligence operating in the solar system and beyond, in which case, again, that increases the chances that we are dealing with a engineered event, because there's one of the arguments in mainstream science, in SETI and, you know, in space science, is that how would aliens find us? Like, why would aliens stumble on us, you know, in this vast universe? You know, what's the chances of them happening upon us? Now, you could say it's fairly low if it's just through chaotic means, you know, that they're slowly exploring the galaxy, they stumble on us. However, if they've seeded worlds and they are monitoring these worlds, then you suddenly can explain this interaction that so many people claim that they have interacted with beings or they've seen craft and all of these things, which they fit better with that model. And again, one of the reasons why these craft and events are dismissed is that chance, you know, that the scientists say, well, what's the chance they would have found us? But they're ignoring the possibility that if a planet is seeded and is being interacted with the whole time, some shepherding from an intelligence, then yes, we would expect to see indications of that shepherding intelligence. And I contest that we do, that we see this throughout prehistory into distant, you know, ancient history written accounts and into the modern day. So that's why I would say that, you know, the evidence in our recorded history points to contact, and the idea that there's a contact better fits with there being an intelligence that's already been aware of life forming on this planet. Because the only thing interesting here is life. I mean, right. There's plenty of planets out there. We know that now. There's billions. So right. Why would an intelligence be interested in Earth? The only thing we have which we see as being rare in space is life. So how do they know that we're here? How do they know there's life? I think that fits better with them seeding the planet in the first place.
We do have very nice mountains.
We have
just
love
saying,
scenery.
Good hiking, yeah.
it's the skiing. So exogenesis, you know, so the title of the book, and now that I'm getting the exogenesis, implies that that this has happened twice, because to be a hybrid human, they would have had to have come back. They didn't hybridize. I'm getting the impression that they didn't hybridize the bacteria or the formulations of life, that they hybridized the human. So they would have had to have come back somewhere in the evolutionary process and done it again. Is that the implication?
Well, I would suggest that we have a shepherding, almost a farming that's happening here. So if you look at, say, the Cambrian explosion, where we suddenly have a huge number of organisms that appear in the fossil record that don't have precursors, right? Which has been a mystery in evolutionary sciences for a long time. Creationists suggest that this infers the hand of God reaching in, and there's been a big debate about that. But if you look at the work of, say, Professor Chandra Wickramasinghe, who's an expert astrobiologist, used to work with the legendary Fred Hoyle, essentially the founders of panspermia theory, that, you know, he points out that this can be better explained by ongoing panspermia events, that if you have a retrovirus that rains down from space, and again, there's huge amounts of viruses raining down all the time from the upper atmosphere, he contests that a lot of these are coming from space, right? So this is a controversial idea, but there's a lot of academics on his side, and recently I had a paper co-authored with 30 or so other scientists suggesting that the Cambrian explosion is one of these moments where a virus rains down, infects the organisms on the planet, and that then the information in those viruses essentially uploads into the genome. And that causes these mutagenic events. And also viruses spreading between different species, right? They can carry information, you know, characteristics of those species. It's what's called horizontal gene transfer. That, you know, aspects of one organism can be carried across to another via these viral infections. And this is a key part of evolution.
Hi, this is Chuck Kenny with Shasta Gas Propane and Shasta Tanks. Because of the probability of our power being shut off during wind events or fires, many people are installing standby generators. Shasta Gas is now selling standby generators with propane tanks so that you will have home power during these outages. Give us a call at 365-3793 to get a quote on a generator and tank installation. That number again is 365-3793.
Pulse Urgent Care is happy to announce the reopening of our urgent care clinic. Our hours are Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., Saturday 10 a.m. to 3 p.m., and closed on Sundays. To protect the patients and the staff, we will continue to follow the recommendations on social distancing and face coverings. If you have or had a fever, cough, or shortness of breath within the last 14 days, please call ahead at 530-722-1111 for screening. Check out our website and Facebook page for more information. PulseUrgentCareCenter.com, 100 East Cypress Avenue. If it's urgent for you, it's important to
Founded in 1995, GI Pathology is the only physician-owned laboratory in the United States dedicated solely to the practice of gastrointestinal and liver pathology. The company provides the highest quality GI pathology diagnosis made exclusively by one of our fellowship-trained gastrointestinal and liver pathologists. GI Pathology delivers results to its Northern California client base within an industry-leading 24 hours. Call 888-2-GI-PATH or go to www.gipath.com for more information.
Tobacco and Brew, located at 2143 Hilltop Drive, has been an integral part of our community for over 40 years. They have supported the veterans, law enforcement, fire and disaster survivors throughout this whole time. Tobacco and Brew has expanded their walk-in humidor and brought to the North State new lines of fine cigars, pipes, and tobacco products. Additionally, they are offering a pipe bar to try out new tobacco for taste and aroma. Tobacco and Brew is your one-stop shop for any tobacco product and accessories to include lighters, humidors, pouches, and more. Tobacco and Brew, 2143 Hilltop Drive.
Hi, this is Judy Maxwell. Life can happen in an instant. Sometimes you plan for it, like retirement or taking care of your family. Sometimes it's a surprise, like a winter storm with home or property damage. Sometimes it may be an unexpected accident or illness or even a premature death. Whatever life throws at you, you'll wish you had gotten the right insurance when you had the chance. That's where Maxwell Insurance can help. For more than a quarter century, we've been serving the North State because it's our home, too. Give us a call at 221-0441 to let us help you review your policies and prepare you for whatever your future holds. Maxwell Insurance, 1378 Hilltop Drive, 221-0441.
Listening to Chauncey and Kara on Radio Wasteland right here on 96.5 FM and 1460 AM. That's Free Fire Radio. And don't forget to follow Radio Wasteland on Facebook at facebook.com/radiowasteland.us.
But these aliens are going to have to be, you know, many, many billions of years old. They're going to have to be staggeringly advanced to make all this work.
Mm-hmm.
Just sort of mind-boggling to wrap your head around, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I would assume, again, I can't say, you know, how, but once we start dealing with the ability to travel through the universe, I mean, our assumption would be that this is something like wormhole travel, you know, or Alcyon drives, you know, either bending space-time, warping it around a craft, or, you know, doing these kind of, you know, exotic mechanisms to travel. So knowing that these are so far off for us, they're so hypothetical. But, yeah, well, I think you have to be dealing with a civilization that is at least tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of years ahead to be at this level.
That raises something I hadn't thought of, which is that, you know, these creatures... Because I was thinking, so what, they're just seeding the planet and then they're just waiting for 4 billion years. But like you said, they would have, time being relative and all, they would have access to ways to speed up their perception of the process.
You can go into this in a way that's very mind-bending, that, for example, yeah, if you have these technologies, essentially you're dealing with time travel as well as space travel. So, and people sort of wonder that. They say, you know, why would you want to do that? But let's say you can see the planet and then you are able to bend space-time and you know, you go back to wherever you're from, but possibly you can target points in the timeline where you come back and you do certain things and leave again. Now it's conceivable that the same beings that, you know, the very same beings that do the seeding could come back later, a billion years later, and they're still alive because the time for them is not the same for us. Right? And this is a kind of, sure, a mind bender for people, but you know, it could literally be the same guy or whatever, you know, the same person. I don't know. I mean, who knows what they look
some
like.
Some grad
the same
student
robot,
just doing a product.
Yeah, but it could be that same individual organism or entity or robot or whatever, you know, could come back and it'd be that very same one. And that's a kind of mind bender because, you know, for us, obviously, billions of years have gone past. But for that individual, that wouldn't necessarily be the case at all if they're using wormhole travel, right?
Sure.
So
yeah.
I think that's when we clash with these ideas of highly advanced extraterrestrial civilizations, we have to bend our mind in a way to realize that is not like us. And too often we hear people say, well, why would they want to do that? Or we wouldn't do that. Or, you know, it's like, hang on, you know, with alien minds, right? And that aliens that perhaps have technologies that we say that can bend the space continuum, right? So it's unlikely that we are going to have the same drives and impetus and plans as a civilization that operates on an almost godlike scale.
You know, that
yeah.
That brings up the disturbing possibility that we're just some kid's school project, you know, because...
It's what I was saying, a grad student. It's just like...
You're right, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's going to get a C-plus on Earth, and it's like, right. Okay, I passed, whatever.
Right.
Leave them to their own devices now.
And one concerning thing with that, of course, is what do you do if your project goes wrong? I mean, just
absolutely,
reboot it or something, you know. So when you're at possibly the mercies of civilizations like that, yeah, there is that kind of creepy element to it that not only are you really sort of outclassed in every sense, but they could reset that experiment. And you may be one of so many experiments as to be, rather than being special, as to be really, you know, oh, your project 7,603,000,000 and we'll just check on them once in a while, but you know, there's better ones out there that are working out better, you know. We kind of have to think like that. And one of the things I found really fascinating recently that came up, and this is a mind bender for people that, you know, don't necessarily follow the cutting edge of space science, right? What's going on there?
Mm-hmm.
There's a chap who a leading thinker in the field, right? Who recently put out a paper saying that, you know, it's assumed that many of these civilizations, again, with the assumption that they're out there, that if there's many of these advanced civilizations, that a lot of them, perhaps 90% or more, will be post-biological and that they will have transitioned to either uploading themselves into silica networks and existing as echoes of themselves in AI networks, or their technologies will outlive them and that the biological forms have become extinct, but their robots and their AI crafts and all these things will go on essentially, you know, indefinitely, long after biology has vanished. Now, there's a lot of reasons why that's likely. I mean, obviously we can kind of infer it from ourselves being the only life that we are well studied. We can see that in terms of, you know, intelligent life, we are already creating these machines that if we disappeared tomorrow, at least for some period, you know, our robots or AI could go on for a while without us, you know, that some of these machines
sure.
could. Now, if we have something, you know, if we were, say, 200 years time from now, what would we have? You know, we probably would have kinds of either post-biological people to some degree and AI and stuff that we could run on without us, you know, from solar power and all the rest doesn't really need us. So if that's true, if there's a lot of those out there, first of all, it gives us a good chance that that's who we would meet first rather than biological life, the machines, you know, of mm-hmm. some civilization. Secondly, if you could upload yourself, you can also potentially download yourself. And this is what this scientist was saying, that, you know, could it be that they reach a point where they decide that post-biological existence actually isn't preferable to biological existence, and they decide to go the other way. Now, let's say that before you upload yourself, you set a reset point. Now, what would a reset point be like for a godlike civilization that's doing a project like this? It might be the seeding of a world that will produce a large number of biological containers for consciousness that then, if you wish to return to the, you know, the physical biological world, that you can return to that planet and download yourself into the fetuses of that species.
Wouldn't it be easier for them to just I don't know, make a farm, you know, test people grown in test tubes, you know, then they can control the process a little bit, at least.
Well,
rather than seeding a planet.
Well, it's one way. I mean, it depends on why, and again, what works better. I mean, if you have a huge lab, I mean, it becomes like a store planet in the end, isn't it? I mean, how do you get this whole thing to keep going happily along without you? I suppose you need that, the infrastructure, and what nature does really is provides the infrastructure to keep alive all of these beings, you know, these entities. Whereas if you have a lab, you kind of have to be hands-on with a lab, and you know, you're the one running it, keeping it going, you know, energy going into it, focusing on it. If you're focusing on some other project, you know, you decide to experience being the AI world, you could probably have some vast lab like that, but then possibly, and again, I'm just speculating, possibly they're working it out, they realize it's easier to have it as a planet. So if we have something like that, we could have a situation where such beings arrived here and say, you know, they want to return to biology. I mean, that'd be a creepy kind of scenario where it's like, well, we turn up and, you know, we've grown you so that we can utilize you, you know, as vessels. So who knows, we could deal with...
It's like we're an organ farm. Like a giant organ farm, you know.
Yeah,
like
don't like that.
No,
are none of these theories are all of these theories absolutely terrifying. You know,
they don't have to be. But I think it's that I like to encourage people to expand beyond the simple ideas of aliens thinking like humans. You know, that they just want to come and get water, or they want to come get gold, or they want to take us over and be slaves. Right? These are sort of what I consider simplistic human concerns about extraterrestrials, rather than higher level, you know, they're dealing with beings that can go to any planet they want, right? If they want land, resources, minerals, water, that stuff is abundant.
Right.
Like, totally
right.
Abundant. Universe. So,
you know, I agree with you. I've always had a problem with the idea that we were some sort of slave class or something like that, created by a technology that should be able to create nanotech, that should be able to take apart a planet and turn it into robot helpers. It's like,
yeah,
you know, this actually comes closer to me to the idea of why one would do this.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, even down the lines of, 2001, A Space Odyssey, of just spreading life for the sake of spreading life because all of the universe is similar and that life is where interesting things happen, was kind of the implication of 2001.
Well, yeah, and also in that we see there that we don't really encounter the biological organisms. We encounter their machines, you know, what appears to be a kind of silica block, which we can assume is something like an AI, you know, silica network, like probe or whatever, you know, what we call a Bracewell probe. Bracewell Sentinel probe is something you can leave on a planetary surface, which will monitor, record data, can give contact back to another planet, and potentially can be programmed to activate and make contact with a civilization once it reaches a certain level and, you know, interact. Now, that's a hypothetical object, you know, in space sciences, but what we see in 2001 A Space Odyssey is essentially a Bracewell probe. And so that's kind of funny because, again, the likelihood is that we would have at least initial encounters with the technologies of other civilizations rather than the biological, you know, organism. Again, to do the laws of probability, if there's 90% probably not post-biological, you know, systems, and if we assume all advanced civilizations use technology, because again, that's kind of what we're saying when we say advanced, that they have to be able to fly around in ships or bend space-time. So their machinery is far more likely to connect with us first in some sense, right? So I think 2001 A Space Odyssey does a good job of reflecting that the beings themselves may be so far beyond us as to, you know, simply employ their technologies for the most part to deal with other planets and other civilizations and stuff, right? And again, biology is not usually well suited to space travel, right? It could be that entities can put themselves into suspended animation, or that they may have lifespans that are just extraordinarily long, or that they're cybernetically enhanced and they live a long time. But we would usually assume biology is not well suited to vast, you know, periods in space. Or, you know, there's all these assumptions that all of your beginning parts of your exploration of the galaxy would utilize probes.
Yeah.
This is Chuck Kenny with Shasta Gas Propane and Shasta Tanks. Because of the probability of our power being shut off during wind events or fires, many people are installing standby generators. Shasta Gas is now selling standby generators with propane tanks so that you will have home power during these outages. Give us a call at 365-3793 to get a quote on a generator and tank installation. That number again is 365-3793.
You know, it can be difficult to find a trustworthy, knowledgeable, and yet affordable auto repair shop. Advanced Automotive is a second-generation, locally owned, full-service repair shop serving our community since 1993, and one of only four AAA-approved auto repair shops in the Reading area. Advanced Automotive has a goal, and it's to keep it simple to have safe, reliable vehicles for our customers and our community. Call or come by to meet the crew who is here to serve you. 244-4423 at Advanced Automotive.
Hi, this is Mark from Haven Humane Society. It has been a challenging couple of years, and through it all, our amazing team has continued to save lives. We have so many fantastic animals that are looking for their forever homes, and with adoption fees so low, now is the time to add to your family. With puppies, kittens, dogs, cats, and so many more, we have the perfect addition. Come join our team as a volunteer and help in an area that works for you. Walking dogs, socializing cats, helping our veterinary hospital, or folding laundry. We have many opportunities and welcome all volunteers. For more information, please visit our website at havenhumane.org or follow us on Facebook. On behalf of the entire Haven team, thank you for all of your continued support as together we get closer every day to North State with no more homeless pets.
Remember us, the Tula Kid? Well, we're back, and we would like to ask you a few questions. Do you love TV? Do you like low prices? Call our daddy.
Hi, this is Doug Tooley with B&T Satellite. You know that by not calling the 800 number for your satellite needs, you get local service, faster installation, and most importantly, we speak your language. We ask the questions to ensure you get the right package for you and your family. We do big dishes, we do little dishes, we do internet dishes, we even do dishes.
Dad, I have never seen you do dishes.
That's because I do them most of the time.
So do I.
No, you don't.
Hey kids, we're working here. Give us a call and we'll help you figure out the best for your family. Whether it's dish services or local antenna help or streaming services, call me, Doug Tooley, 241-DISH, that's 241-3474, or visit us on the internet at btsatellite.com.
B&T Satellite is a DISH authorized retailer. Restrictions apply. Ask for details.
Hi, I'm Arielle Winter. If you're anything like me, your pets are not only your best friends, they're part of your family. American Humane, which has been rescuing animals like Cleo here for more than 100 years, has life-saving tips that can make a big difference in a disaster. When disaster strikes, you want to protect your whole family, including your pets. To help keep your family safe and help our best friends in their worst times, find tips at AmericanHumane.org.
You're listening to Free Fire Radio, 96.5 FM. 1460 AM. You're listening to Radio Wasteland with Chauncey and Kara. Find all our shows and archives by visiting Radio Wasteland at radiowasteland.us.
Look at the Hopi. They say that the Bahana, the white brother, will return with a tablet that they're supposed to have, and that tablets were left to the different groups on Earth. And this lore is everywhere. So yeah. If you think about it, it's uncanny and suspicious. I think that these, what I would consider to be sort of graceful probes, have been left at different locations around this planet, and that in prehistory that they have been interacted with by different groups. And that, you know, we have the Hebrew story that these things are, in some respect, the voice of God speaks through them, and that they, you know, in the tabernacle, and that they shouldn't be looked on by people, they're kept by the high priests, and, you know, it's a repeating mythology there, right? So what is right. going on here? You know, I think that we have objects that have been left by beings in prehistory that interact with us a bit like the obelisks, you know, back to 2001, A Space Odyssey. What are these things doing? Are they solely monitoring or are they shepherding? Right? Again.
Right.
So this is...
Yeah.
And I know it's a leap for people, of course, it's a leap, so I can't show them one, but, you know, assuming that these all these different traditions are talking about real objects, then they sound like racial probes.
You know, I don't know if it is a leap, and there have been a lot of people who have tried to say that through media and science and fiction and all of them put together, they've been trying to slowly open our minds to these possibilities, you know, not unlike a religion, but the religion of reality, to try to slowly open our minds to reality, and I don't know, maybe that is happening.
Well, we're moving into what is clearly a kind of technocratic age, right, with the technocrats and their technology and their technocratic religion. And in some respects, this story would make a good technocratic religion. Now, maybe that should be concerning to us, because I don't think that a technocratic future is all that wonderful looking to me. But this is kind of a story of godlike technology, godlike intelligences, godlike AIs, and which is kind of what we're being spun here by people, you know, at the head of these fields, like Bill Gates and Elon Musk. I think they're kind of selling this idea of, you know, merging with the machines and, you know, chips in our heads and chips in us. And eventually, you know, where is that going? You know, this sounds a bit like this is the kind of reason they might like us to have. But forget God, forget nature, forget the, what we should be sort of is the mighty super intelligent AI and our merger with the divine machine. You know, all these ideas. So it is kind of, I don't know, it's an uncanny timing for this information to come out at a moment when really we are on the edge of all these things. You know, we are engineering, you know, just as we're engineering, you know, primates, right? We're changing them, and, you know, we're talking about gene editing mosquitoes, right, so that they will become extinct. So we have this, the gene drives. And so. Now, in the book, I talk about that as well. I mean, that's, again, you could say the key point of this. I know we haven't got too much time, but I'll just reiterate that there's an important point here, that 780,000 years ago, not only do we have this object orbiting, but that's when we see changes in the genome of early hominins that give rise to the lines of large-brained humans. So us, Neanderthals, Denisovans, and a number of unnamed large-brained hominins that we have interbred with throughout prehistory, but we haven't got their fossils because we don't give them names yet, right? But we know there's a number of them. They all come out of a number of events that happen there, particularly a gene fusion, fusion of chromosome 2, sorry, not gene fusion, and that there's a number of genetic changes, gene changes at that time. When the brain goes into a massive acceleration, we have in the fossil record this sudden upward curve in the cranial capacity, right, at 780,000 years ago. Isn't that uncanny that we have this object exploding, a silica object in orbit, the hominin genome suddenly is modified in a way that leads to large-brained humans, and at this same point, we have the last geomagnetic reversal on this planet, 780,000 years ago, and a multi-directional asteroid bombardment, unexplained, which again is inferred in this information, we're told is engineered, that these beings do that. And that turned out, considering that this information was published 2003, this story, which I based my work on, and just in 2016, they found that there is indeed impact scars from a multi-directional impact event around 780,000 years ago. Nobody knew about it back then. So with all those things pointing to that period, why is it that none of us have really heard of it? And why is it that this isn't a big story? Why isn't there a Nat Geo special on 780,000 years ago, you know, the era of chaos, when we have strange objects in space and asteroid bombardments and a magnetic pole shift and the anomalies in the human genome? Why is that not a bigger story? Why am I having to find out about this in this really abstract, arcane, mystical way, you know, coming out of someone else's encounter with an object, as I would have never heard of any of this? That's the truth of this. That's one of the strangest elements. I would not have heard of any of these real-world scientific events without that happening.
Well, I have to admit that you put this in a way that, you know, we've discussed human hybrids before, and I never really felt that it was explained very well to me. It was always slave people and stuff like this, you know, but this definitely puts it in a realistic, well, I don't know if realistic is the right word, seeing how it's so far out of our understanding, but in a conceivable light. I've really enjoyed this.
Yeah.
Coming up on the end here, I want to make
sure mind-bending stuff.
Yeah, I want to make sure our audience is able to find out more about you. Our guest tonight has been Bruce R. Fenton. His book is Exogenesis, Hybrid Humans, A Scientific History of Extraterrestrial Genetic Manipulation. I know you can get the book on Amazon. Is there any other place that people would find out more about you and follow your stuff?
Sure, yeah. I mean, they can go to my pages. I have brucefenton.info, hybridhumans.net. My co-author, my wife, has DanielaFenton.com. And also I'm on Twitter quite a lot at ExogenesisHH, as in hybrid humans, where people can follow me there and interact with me there. I have an upcoming short video production that's based on this same information. And that should be, I think, at the end of the month, that should be available on Amazon for streaming.
And that's, is that anybody with a Prime, or how does that work?
I would assume so. I kind of is collaborating with a friend, Alex at Skeptico, and he's kind of arranged it. So I don't know specifically how that's going to work, but I would assume so, that if you have Prime, that you probably have access to it. And if not, you could rent it. I think that's most likely. It may also be on YouTube. We're just deducing now, I think, how exactly we're going to put it out, but it's essentially done. So that gives people access. There's also the books on Audible, you know, and on audio services, wherever those are, for those that don't like to read, you know, print or Kindle. I recognize that's an issue. So yeah, it's accessible. I think the information is accessible. It's everywhere, and people can interact. They can Google all the things we've talked about. They can see that I'm not just pulling these words out of anywhere. You know, I spoke tektites, Bracewell probes, these discoveries of the impact. All these things are out there, you know, that people can go and check themselves. I'm not just sitting here and conjuring these up, you know, putting them together. You know, check the dates, yeah, the articles, you know.
Okay, well,
wow.
You've been listening to Bruce R. Fenton here talking about his book, Exogenesis, Hybrid Humans, A Scientific History of Extraterrestrial Genetic Manipulation. You can find the book on Amazon. I know we all giggled when we said people didn't want to read, but I have to admit I am an audiobook guy, so I personally found that. I was laughing because I'm that guy. He has an upcoming new documentary about it on Amazon, so look for it there. And of course, if you forget any of that information and are looking for links, visit us at radiowasteland.us and we will connect you. Thank you very much for being on the show, Bruce.
Thank you so much. I'm glad you both seemed at least mind expanded and impressed with some of the details, so I'm glad of that.
Thank
you very much.
Well, it's fun. We do this because it's fun.
Yeah.
You know, it's fun to think outside of the box, you know. Too much of life is in the box, and I don't know, so many, I don't expect people to be obsessed with finding the answers, but, you know, don't be content with not finding them, I think, is probably the safest.
And science is the quest for the anomalous, in a way, isn't it? It's to rectify the anomalies, explore the strange, and find the, you know, the answers. So if we don't look at the anomalies, we'll never do that. We can't get to that.
Right. Maybe we need some sort of bank of artsy fartsy folks like Kara and I to just look at other people's stuff and point out some
things. Yeah. We probably do have to restructure science to think, if we took that into account, just keep that in mind. Maybe we do need to not leave it just to the you know, the logical minded brain acts. It doesn't need more of the arts and people.
I think you're right. All right, well, thank you very much for being on the show.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.